Hello and welcome to the second Relatively Football podcast. I'm Theo Lloyd-Hughes and I'm here with my sister Flo.
Hello, hello.
How's it going, Flo?
Good. I'm a bit tired after a bumper weekend of
massive weekend.
FAWSL action, but I'm looking forward to more and I'm excited about the season and the new signings that are still popping through over the next couple of days.
Yeah, what were your, such a memorable kind of bombastic weekend? What were your kind of biggest takeaways or the most memorable moments for you?
I think Arsenal's demolition of Reading is pretty,
a lot of goals.
Pretty impressive. And I've been on now like three podcasts saying, yeah, I thought Reading could be pushing for top four. But when I said that to Matt Beard yesterday, he looked stunned. So, yeah, I think maybe... I mean, it's one game and it's Arsenal, but I think Arsenal definitely maybe proved a few people wrong who didn't have them down as title contenders. And this was a real statement win to say, you know, don't write us off just because we didn't buy any flashy players in the summer. We've still got a team that's been together for a very long time and a lot of quality and a lot of firepower. And just the quality of some of those goals was so good. You know, Miedema's goal,
Kim
Little's volley, and yeah, one of Jill Rod's goals, which is such a little nice passing bit of play, team goal. Like, and to see Daniel Carter as well on her sort of comeback. Now, obviously spent a lot of her career at Arsenal. To see her get a goal, a start for Reading after back-to-back ACL injuries was also really nice. So I think, yeah, that was my standout match of the weekend.
I think the good news is in a league that people were worried about maybe being quite top-heavy, and obviously it's still very, very early, you saw some kind of second-tier teams look quite good. Everton and Man United, I suppose, in particular. Obviously, you were saying Reading got a lot of buzz, but maybe had a tough opening day. But I think it's cool to see Everton come in looking so hot and players like Lucy Graham kind of making a step up, obviously against her former side, which Bristol, which might have been quite a heartbreak. But that was, I don't know, you watch football at any level for kind of these mesmerizing moments where you see people do things you could never imagine. And that Lucy Graham kind of flicked back heel rainbow assist was, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before. So that was kind of mesmerizing for me, maybe as a highlight, as well as just kind of seeing Man United clip Chelsea and get something in that game, I think was something we were really worried about, is these bigger teams getting away. And that was really encouraging. Did you catch any of the NWSL?
I didn't. I saw a few clips on Twitter, but beyond that, I saw Midge Purse's goal.
That was arguably the biggest moment of the weekend for anyone, was just Midge Purse not playing at fullback.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. I saw the team sheet and I automatically got excited. And then obviously I was texting you when that goal came in, and she's proved her point there that that's where she should be played. And I'm excited to see what else she does during the full series. But apart from that, I didn't see anything, but I did laugh about the fact that I think on the Friday there were only 7 Orlando players registered on their roster or something.
I think it might have been 12, but yeah, it was very.
And fans were saying like, who's gonna get called up to play?
I think Orlando have another week. I don't think they're playing this weekend. I think they're playing the weekend.
Yeah. There's time, but it's obviously with everything going on with the transfers, players are getting poached and they're not replacing them fast enough.
Yeah, I think one of the best, most impressive things about the FAWSL this weekend was that it's been away for 6 months and the games had so much verve and skill and energy and it didn't really miss a beat. And maybe that is because there's been such an influx of top talent from all over the world because of stuff like COVID. But I will say that the NWSL, the North America's top division, I thought also came back and looked really good despite lots of players leaving and having another 42 day break between the Challenge Cup. And I thought the level of the game, the tempo was really good. And seeing players like Midge Purse, who have been in US women's national team squads, but not necessarily kind of household names. And obviously has a real, for those that don't know, has like a kind of cult following of fans because of her skill on the pitch and her personality off the pitch. She's a Harvard board, something, I forget which, but she serves on the board of Harvard And she also helped lead the kind of Black Lives Matter action that the NWSL on the weekend caught up to the WNBA, which I thought was really cool. She was saying in her post-match interview that she actually texted Natasha Cloud, who is a really, really good WNBA player in America. And she's not playing the WNBA this year just to do social justice action and make sure she stays involved. She didn't feel like playing was the right responsibility for her. So Midge Purse, who scored the winner for Sky Blue, actually just texted Tash Cloud, and she drove these t-shirts that said, "You're either with us or against us," down to the stadium on Saturday and just dropped them off for the players to wear and to kind of get their message heard before the game. So I thought that was, you know, what was going on the pitch was some really high quality football, and seeing that kind of sisterhood and togetherness of multiple leagues in North America, I thought was really inspiring as well. Anything else off the pitch for back in England that kind of surprised you, Flo, or caught your eye?
Over the weekend, not really. I mean, we've got a test event in the UK this coming weekend. Mm. West Ham are going to be playing at their new stadium in Dagenham. And for UK listeners, obviously most of them will be aware that the government are sort of doing these small sporting events to see when fans might be able to be allowed back in permanently. So they've had a rugby game, a friendly game in football, and this will be the first competitive football match since lockdown. So I think it's a real kind of honour a little bit that they've picked a women's game to do it. And also West Ham being in their new stadium, that's exciting. And it's a proper football stadium as well.
How many tickets are they doing?
They can have 1,000 fans.
Okay.
So and it's not a lot.
Is that all allocated already?
I think they probably would have done like a ballot or something. That's what they did for the other test events they've done. So you sort of applied and you found out whether you got picked. So hopefully it will be, you know, a full house in terms of how many they're allowed to have. And if it goes well, they can start bringing fans back in. But obviously that's relying on a lot of other things that we know are sort of out of everyone's control. And it's extremely expensive. You know, I was chatting to Matt Beard yesterday because I was doing Talk Sports Women's Football Weekly show, and he was just talking about how much the FA have spent on testing alone for the players since they've come back for training and this first week of matches. And I, you know, that is that concern about is how sustainable is that if they're going to have to carry on testing, or there's going to be the second wave that almost seems inevitable. So it's one to keep an eye on. And although the league was postponed initially and it seemed like cost was the biggest factor, it wasn't the only factor, and player safety was also, you know, played a big part in it. And everyone was disappointed because it seemed like the FA weren't willing to spend the money, but I don't think that was the only reason. But now they are spending the money, but it's really difficult to keep these things going and keep them safe. And the Premier League and EFL did it with the Championship, but it was not cheap. So it'll be interesting to see how that continues.
Well, let's take a little break, and then we're going to come back with some fresh news away from last weekend and looking at what's going on this week. All right, we'll be back in a sec. Theo, and I'm here with Flo. We're going to talk about the biggest news this week. So Flo, Lucy Bronze, the greatest right back in the history of the world, is back playing football in the FAWSL, back with Manchester City. What are you feeling? There's a lot of feels out there on the internet right now.
Yeah, I think everyone's really excited. It's just people ended up being frustrated with the fact that it took so long for them to announce it. And I can understand why she didn't want to say anything in the press, because it's probably not very professional, not very fair to her Lyon teammates. But everyone knew it was happening and it was this inevitable thing. But we were just sort of counting down the clock saying, like, when are you announcing it? When are you announcing it? People tweeting saying, you know, like me waiting for the announcement. Like,
A lot of memes.
Yeah, a lot of memes. So I'm glad we can finally talk about it being a reality, rather than say, you know, Bronze is set to join Manchester City, and say, you know, Bronze is a Man City player, and I'm excited to see her back and just more and more firepower for Manchester City. And yeah, and they needed it too, because they've struggled with right back. They had Fidalgo, who I think is Spanish or Portuguese, not 100% sure, who was a right back they brought, but it never quite worked out. So they ended up playing Janine Becky at right back for a lot of last season. I think even Georgia Stanway was tried there once. Right back's been a big issue.
She was.
Yeah. It was a big issue for Nick Cushing. And to have Lucy Bronze back as a, you know, go-to right back who you can trust and obviously has incredible ability is awesome for Gareth Taylor and just boosts their possibility of winning the title.
Do you feel like off the back of the news that the women's football show on BBC got 2 million viewers on Sunday night, do you feel like bringing back Lucy Bronze to English women's domestic football is another huge coup to kind of keep that momentum going? I think we talk about momentum a lot and we talk about growth a lot, but I feel like I have not watched as much Lucy Bronze since she went to Lyon, apart from in the Champions League, really. And I think bringing a player of her caliber and spotlight will kind of further keep people in and watching Man City or otherwise just the league in general.
Yeah, definitely. And also the FA did announce recently that they're going to be bringing in a homegrown player quota from next season.
I believe it was 8 players, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not too fussed about that. I don't know if it's because so many international players have suddenly arrived and they got spooked. It's probably something they've been thinking about a while, because the whole target at the moment is about winning a major tournament. It's about winning the home Euros, and it's about winning the next World Cup. And it's obviously really important that homegrown players are getting opportunities. And I think maybe they've been looking at how big clubs like Chelsea have been adding to their squads and are worried that English players aren't going to get opportunities. So I think, yeah, I didn't think it was necessarily vital, but I appreciate they've done that. And so in a sense, you can understand why clubs are thinking we need to bring the best English talent back. But I also think it's great for players to get that experience. We've always said it with England's men's team as well.
Yeah.
Why don't more players play abroad? And I think from the way she's been playing with England and the way I've watched her in the Champions League, I do think she's grown as a player. I haven't watched enough of her, you know, early days WSL games to really probably do a real deep down analysis, but she's been playing with some of the best players in the world. So she's used to playing at a certain level. And I think that probably helps her grow as a player. And I think Nikita Paris has grown, definitely, because I think she became a little bit stale at Manchester City towards the end.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, it's a positive. But I hope it doesn't put people off, you know, going and playing abroad, because we've seen how Rachel Daly done with the Houston Dash and how a lot of other English players and Scottish players as well have done well playing in the NWSL. So I don't want it to put players off going abroad.
I think, obviously, I'm sure the move and the contract maybe was kind of put in her head before COVID, but bringing up COVID again, I think it's going to be a season of people staying close to home, and maybe that played a role. It was interesting to see, going off your prediction last week of a women's shirt outselling a men's shirt, Jess Keating on Twitter informed within minutes of Bronze's signing that Bronze's shirt was available on the Manchester City club shop. How anyone affords personalized football shirts in 2020 is beyond me.
Well, that was off the back of Jess tweeting Chelsea that Ramona Backman is still listed as Chelsea Women's 23 on the names you can get printed. And Pernell Harder wasn't yet on there. So
I knew I shouldn't have ordered that Ramona Backman t-shirt. Yes,
I know, you regret it now. But Jess is great at hammering club shop representatives and getting what she deserves. She went to the main Arsenal club shop down the road from me at the Emirates on the weekend, and they were refusing to give her the discount that she justly deserves as a Arsenal women member. They
Despicable.
Said to her, no, you can only get that at Boreham Wood where Arsenal women play. And Jess said, no, I will show you the website. Here it says in the small print. And I think they were left with egg on their face. So Jess is fighting the good fight for
all of us,
for women's football fans everywhere, especially in England, so they can get the overpriced merchandise they deserve.
Lucy Bronze, obviously today back at Manchester City, has also been named in the new England squad. Phil Neville announced a quite a vast England squad. I'm kind of not sure if always this amount of players are named, but I suppose it's been a while since they all got together, about 6-7 months now. So were there any surprises to see the Lionesses being called up? I mean, for me, I thought it's not her first call up, but Alessia Russo being called up from the University of North Carolina again. She played in March in the She Believes, actually after Bronze dropped out, kind of staying on the bronze wire. And her college teammate Lottie Wobbenmoy as well from the University of North Carolina. Both of those players are not playing with the University of North Carolina because of COVID this year, but they've both been called up for England, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and in all of Phil's camps and even in She Believes, he had an eye for picking college players. And I think it's an interesting tactic. And I think, you know, one of the few things that I think is a positive of his reign is giving people opportunities when they might not be playing at pro clubs. And obviously with the college system, players might not stay the full 4 years. Lucy Bronze only went out there for a year, but it's a great part of their experience. And I think they're only going to get better as players when they get to experience that camp and playing with, you know, the top players in England and improving. I also think it's great for the fans because, you know, these are some names that I've never heard of. And I think it's great to bring people's awareness to them because for a lot of them, they would have been playing in the England setup, you know, all the underage groups. So they'll be on the real heads radar. But for a lot of us, they're players that we probably haven't heard of that much. So I think it's really great to see some new names and to also provide a bit of competition for some of those senior pros who probably think that their position in the side is pretty much guaranteed.
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of a middle ground of that as well, which I thought Katie Zellum's call up was a welcome one. And I think she didn't necessarily have the best game. She wasn't the star versus Chelsea she plays for Manchester United, for those that don't know. She wasn't the star on the weekend, but I thought she had a really good season last year, especially, you know, from dead ball situations, like free kicks, corners. And I think it's cool to see her get call up. Gemma Bonner omitted from the England team.
Hashtag free Gemma Bonner.
I saw some good tweets on this morning, though, you know, people getting in a bit of a spat. And I do think looking at what Phil's going for, even though neither of us are particular Phil Neville fans, you know, if you're not Steph Horton, you're not Millie Bright, you're not Abby McManus, you're going to go for those younger players. And I can understand why maybe Bonner, the boat has gone, but I don't know. I don't see if there's necessarily a better centre-back option out there for at least the Olympics, let alone 2022.
I've told you many times, the Steph Horton, Millie Bright combo, I don't think works. And I'm sure we'll talk about this on later episodes, but I think as individuals, they're fantastic, but I don't think they work as a combination. So that's why I think Gemma Bonner would be a good person to break up that twosome and to provide a bit more stability. So I'm disappointed, but I am happy to see Esme Morgan there, who had a fantastic loan spell with Everton, is already proving her worth back at Manchester City. So that's a really good positive. I'm disappointed that Lauren James isn't in there as well. I think a lot of her on Twitter. She is still only 18, so perhaps Phil, and I can understand why, would think that it's better for her just to stay in the junior ranks for the moment. But it would be great to see her get that call up at some point.
I feel like the Olympics is going to come too soon for Lauren James, but I think the European Championships, which will be happening in England in 2022, I think that's when you'll really start to see Lauren James being brought into these squads.
And also, obviously, we should probably say, disclaimer, they didn't pick any players who play abroad because of quarantining. So Nikita Paris, Jade Moore, trying to think of anyone else who's either playing in the States.
Jodie Taylor, technically. Yeah. She might not have been called up. Love you, Jodie. Great Champions League win.
Yeah, so there was that sort of asterisk to it. But yeah, it's a big squad. And I think, you know, they haven't been together for ages, so it's much more just about getting the group together and giving young people an experience. And a call up for Rinsola Babajide, who did stay at Liverpool after they were relegated from WSL. I think a lot of people thought she was going to move because she is too good to be in a championship team, but it's great to see her getting a shot as well. So yeah, a real nice mix of young and exciting talent.
On the subject of getting the gang back together, Kristen Press and Tobin Heath, massive giants of the game, will be joining the FAWSL this season, if reports are to be believed. I feel like it's hard to explain to people who are either new to the game or perhaps not familiar with the American media or the American fan base, but it cannot be stressed how huge these two players are. After Megan Rapinoe, who I'm sure everyone is familiar with, they are definitely the next two biggest stars. Does this feel, I know there's been a lot of Americans who've come over in the past, players like Carly Lloyd, at the peak of their powers, but do you feel like this is an unprecedented moment? I know we talk about transfers a lot, but this feels huge to me.
I think so. I mean, we've obviously been blessed with a rather strange situation because of coronavirus, which I think is like the eighth time we've said that word this podcast, so apologies. But it's obviously a weird scenario with what's happened in the States and how it's impacted the season there, and certainly influenced a lot of the moves that we're now seeing, which is, you know, a great bonus for the WSL, because probably if that hadn't have happened, most of these players wouldn't be here. But yeah, I think it is a real amazing moment. Like, we've had big stars. Crystal Dunn played at Chelsea briefly. Carly Lloyd played at Man City briefly, but I think never really quite felt at home playing in England. So this isn't the first time US international players have played over here. But I think it seems like a big moment just because of how far the game has come. And also I think the way that women's football fan culture has moved on, mainly because of social media as well. And I think that's why this feels like such an iconic moment. I mean, these two are the queens of women's soccer Twitter. The memes, the Stan accounts are incredible. And, you know, shout out to Lucy Bronzer, who I think found that Tobin Heath had started following Manchester United women. So that
which is basically the official sign that anyone has either left or joined the club. It's if they unfollow or follow that club.
And I can't remember, apologies, I can't remember now who was the person that tweeted that Kristen Press was doing an Instagram interview from a hotel room. So clearly quarantining. So it's that kind of detective work, which is why we love women's football fan culture and why it is so unique and why it's so hilarious. I mean, I know, so me and Theo are sort of talking sometimes on this podcast. I think, you know, for some people we know who have said they're listening who don't know much about women's football, but I also know that there's people who are listening who know a lot. So we're trying to find a sort of nice middle ground for everyone. But I think what's great about women's football culture, and if you don't follow any accounts, please do, is that, you know, the fans are willing to sort of laugh at themselves and kind of be very open to the fact that, you know, it's a very star-driven culture. It's all about a lot about individuals. And so that's why I think these moves have such a big impact on the whole game.
I also think for now it's a culture of love. I think that's like, we both involve ourselves in men's football, you know, Twitter and social media sometimes. And I sometimes think it's such a negative kind of space sometimes. And I do really appreciate that the online women's football accounts are coming from this. It feels more like it's coming from a place of support, a place of community, a place of building rather than tearing down.
Well, that's what you think. You should have seen when Fadumo predicted Chelsea would finish third in the WSL on the Telegraph women's predictions. She
I've spoken too soon. They're tearing her down.
I think it was Jesse who said that the Chelsea supporters Facebook group had they'd never seen such chaos on that supporters group page after Fadumo did that. So, you know,
Fadumo, I love the prediction.
You think it's all friendly out there until you say that Chelsea are going to come third.
Emma Hayes missed a trick not pinning that Telegraph report to the dressing room door.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Chelsea motivator. Did not play like they, you know, Fadumo had written that piece. Really quickly, while we're here, a couple of shout outs for any accounts people should follow. At Lucy Bronzer, obviously getting a lot of love.
Oh, Lucy Bronzer is hilarious. There's some good Arsenal ones as well. Miedema stuff is a good one. Post a lot of stuff that's not necessary. There's good memes, but also just good sort of Arsenal updates. So those are my two standouts. I can't. I'll tweet some from the Relatively Football account.
This Friday, we'll do a big follow push. We'll do a big follow push, spread some of the love out there. On kind of flipping away from people coming in, we're going to look at people going out. Fern Whelan announced her retirement. quite sad to see for a sort of uncelebrated but really important player kind of in the English women's game, who sadly through injury is having to retire at 31. How did that retirement make you feel, Flo?
Yeah, pretty depressed. I mean, it's just a reminder of how short professional athletes' careers are. And also, what's unique about women's football, and not in a good way, is the fact that your career is still short, like any professional athlete, but you're also not, you don't have a massive opportunity to make money, because obviously for Fern, the game's only been full-time professional for the latter years of her career. She also never really got a long run in England. She got, I think, 3 caps according to her wiki. And, you know, those who know women's football will know that it's really hard to find stats and data. So this is Wikipedia. So she may have got more, but I don't think she probably ever got an England central contract, which is a nice chunk of money that guarantees you a good salary every year. So if she was only getting part-time professional contracts for most of her career, it's really tough. And when you've then got to think about what you're going to do, not just financially, but mentally, it's a real struggle. And it was a reminder of, you know, how the reality check, I think, about women's football. And I would also say, for all the UK listeners, I would really check out Squad Goals on BBC Three, a new documentary, which is sort of a revamp. I don't know if people remember that either last year or the year before, there was the BBC Three documentary called like Football's Youngest Owner or something. It was about Jack Sullivan, who had taken control of West Ham United women at the age of like 17 or 18. So they've sort of revamped it a bit, and it's now much less about him and more about being a women's footballer and what that's like and the realities of that. And I think it's really good, because I had spoken to some players last year at an event just before the World Cup, and they had said that there's some West Ham players, and they had said that they were really disappointed about the documentary, because they had been pitched it as being about what it's like to be a women's footballer and actually ended up just being about him. So I think this angle is much more interesting, and it's really fun to be able to see, you know, what it's like running a women's football team and being a women's footballer. But yeah, in that as well, Jilly Fagherty talks about, you know, starting a business with her partner and using all her savings to start this business, and how she thinks a lot about what she's going to do after football, and she's trying to create a long-term secure future. So I think Fern's situation as well just is a reminder that for women's footballers, this is not a glamorous lifestyle. You might be, for a lot of the players, they're sharing a house with 2-3 other women. This is, you know, it's a bit like being at uni. This is not mansions and fancy cars. And I think, you know, the game's got a long way to go. And obviously you don't want it to become this like 250 grand a week Premier League madness, but you also need to make sure that people aren't getting by on 20 grand a year, which we had Liverpool players on last year, because you can't live off that in the UK. So it's just a reminder that it's, yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. I loved the scene. I mean, I love to see it, but I thought it was a really well shot scene with Longhurst when she's talking about one of the players leaving the club, so she ends up in the flat on her own, but she can't afford the rent for 2 players because she's now, you know, accountable for both parts of the rent and stuff. And I thought that was really sweet. I think it's the same scene. Katie Longhurst is making her tea. I'm going to butcher her name, but Jacinta
Gallaracci
is making her mate, like in a different flat, and they're cutting between the two. And she's come over from Australia. She's only 18, I suppose 19 now. And I thought that was really sweet to see just sort of the little rituals that the players have. Yeah, it's a really good watch. And I think, yeah, it does kind of expose some of the kind of realities of working and playing in a women's game is not this sort of big flashy lifestyle that maybe some people have associated with sport. We both watched the first episode this week, and we'll probably be dipping into the show kind of episode week by week as we go forward with the podcast. So that's Squad Goals, and it's on BBC iPlayer.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I imagine a lot of people have been watching the Spurs All or Nothing on Amazon. So I've been watching both, and it's been interesting to compare. Obviously, you've got Spurs' ridiculous training ground in Enfield, which I think the women get to use once or twice a week change that because it's mad. And you've got them all living in huge houses, getting waited on hand and foot at the training ground, getting everything done for them. And then you've got this real juxtaposition with the West Ham United documentary. And I think watching them side by side is also really interesting. And they have a lot of fun. And Matt Beard is
a character. Great. He's really great. I loved it just hilarious. In that first team meeting where he's like, we're going to win the first game of the season. We'll get better every game. And Gilly, you're lifting the trophy in May.
I respected his ambition, but I did think that was a bit much. I thought he would at least put like the FA Cup or something since they got to the final. I didn't think he'd go for the league.
It did give me good hope that Rachel Daly's in good hands because Houston Dash don't have an owner like Jack Sullivan, but Matt Beard just seems like the perfect coach for Rachel Daly. Let's just say Matt Beard and Rachel Daly is hand in glove.
When I was with him last night, he was saying, oh, I've just got an email. Apparently, we might be signing this player. And then we tried to get him to tell us. And he was like, no, I can't tell you. I'll get in so much trouble. But yes, incoming West Ham United player. Keep your eyes open.
Well, there you go. That's a huge breaking news.
I have no idea who it is, but it's going to be someone.
I've got a guess. Greenwood.
Well, yeah, I mean, because she was originally linked to going to City as well, and everyone thought, a little bit of competition for Demi Stokes, who's obviously had that position for a while now. And it was always sold as a bit of a double package. So, yeah, that would be cool.
Which I don't understand. I don't understand how that works. Because they went to Lyon together. They would come back together, it seems.
She obviously, Axum was only in Lyon for a year. So maybe, I don't think she played a ton of games. Did she play?
She's an underrated great striker of the ball for a fullback. She can really hit it.
And I love her fake eyelashes.
And we're here for the eyelashes.
You get a great Alex Greenwood. You get great.
Welcome to West Ham.
You get a great striker of the ball and some free eyelashes. So yeah, I think that's a good shout. I can't really think of anyone at the moment, but yeah.
Well, by the time this comes out, the transfer window will be closed. We'll look like idiots, but we're having fun. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and just preview the upcoming weekend. All right. Welcome back to part three of Relatively Football. We're going to be looking ahead to what's going on this weekend, what kind of women's football you can catch, the games that you maybe want to dip into wherever you are in the world. First up on Friday, bit of a late one for the UK, but it's North Carolina playing Houston Dash, both of those teams making their first appearance in the NWSL Fall Series. Houston Dash coming off winning the Challenge Cup in July. That game is going to be at midnight in the UK, 7 p.m. on the East Coast and 10 a.m. On Saturday morning in Australia. Should be quite a good one to watch for the Dash, bringing back a lot of players. North Carolina have had a lot of players drop out through COVID concerns and or kind of personal reasons. So might be a little bit one-sided compared to the game we saw last week in NWSL. And then on Saturday, there's a couple more NWSL games happening in North America. These ones are a little bit better for the UK viewers. You have the Washington Spirit playing the Chicago Red Stars at 5 p.m. in the UK or noon on the East Coast. And then you have Portland Thorns versus...
So you got it's Julie Ertz FC.
Sorry, excuse me. And Julie Ertz should be playing, I think. I don't know if the Red Stars have confirmed their player list, their squad list yet, but Julie Ertz is a great watch. Washington Spirit had a tough one last weekend, but it'll be fun to see them. And this is the game I would really recommend to UK viewers who maybe haven't watched the NWSL before, is Portland Thorns are playing the OL Reign at 8:30 p.m. UK time on Saturday night. All these games are free to watch on Twitch if you are in the UK or anywhere in the world. And that last game, the Thorns versus the Reign, is only on CBS in the US. Obviously, on Saturday, there's a big one in the WSL, West Ham playing Arsenal at 5:20 p.m. And that game's on BT Sport, correct?
I actually have no idea what channel the game's on, but if it's not on BT Sport, it'll be on the FA Player. So either way, hopefully you'll be able to watch it because BT Sport are doing a lot of games for free. So hopefully it'll want to be one of the games.
Yeah, the Villa the Villa City game was free to air last week. And so I would check in on this, but I think it's on BT Sport, possibly free to air. It's 5:20 PM. This game, I think it's going to be amazing. As you said earlier, they're going to be testing fans out. We saw in the documentary Squad Goals how West Ham Arsenal was quite a good game last year. I'm quite frustrated though, that obviously there's another league in England called the Premier League, and they've decided to come back this weekend, and they've put Liverpool versus Leeds at the exact same time. I think it's frustrating because Liverpool are coming off their first title in 30 years. Leeds are playing their first Premier League game in 16 years. And to have a big women's game in a nice time slot after tea time kickoff, and then to put arguably the most anticipated men's game, I just think it's really frustrating, let alone the fact for me, Rachel Daly, who's been waiting to watch Leeds in the Premier League for 16 years, is going to be playing, in Dagenham. So she can't even watch the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty classic. Obviously, the Premier League are in charge of the Premier League and the FA are in charge of the WSL. I'm sure there's a bit of crossover, but obviously two different organisations, Premier League much more commercial focused, FA still a grassroots governing body as well as looking after some competitions. So it's difficult, but it is the same old story with these fixture situations. You always have teams that have successful, I mean, this is a slightly different argument, but you always have teams that have successful men's and women's teams, Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City, playing at crossover times on Sunday where fans can't watch both or can't get to both games. And it's always consistently happens where you might have a 2 and a 4 or a 2 and a 4:30 or whatever it may be. And it's really frustrating. And yeah, I agree. I think, there will be different audiences for those two games. And I think the fact that if the BT Sport game is behind a paywall, which I should have checked, but I think if it is behind a paywall, that will knock off a lot of potential viewers anyway. And I think, I think it is frustrating.
I think it's egregious. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that you can cut your nose off to spite your face like this. Going back to this idea of Lucy Bronze returning, Tobin Heath, Kristen Press, the FAWSL deserves to be taken seriously and be put into a place where you can let people see it. And I just think it's really frustrating to see it buried like that. Trying to be more positive, looking ahead to Sunday on a more positive note, Chelsea are playing Bristol City in the early kickoff, which is going to be on BT Sport. Not too confident on this one, Flo, if you're a Bristol fan?
Yeah, it's pretty brutal for Bristol City. And I feel a bit sorry for them that they're going to be having to play on national television to this Chelsea team who have struggled to score goals in the league as of yet with just that one in the opening weekend. But this could be pretty brutal. Bristol City took some beatings last season, obviously that 11-1 against Arsenal, and I think they lost 6-0 against Chelsea at King's Meadow. So it could get ugly on the weekend. Bristol City opened their season with a 4-0 defeat against Everton. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to be very nice for them. And Bristol City are going to be going on to, I think, games against Arsenal, Man City. So this is just like the beginning of a really tough run, and they could find themselves like minus 20 goal difference or something ridiculous by the time that this run finishes.
I also think Chelsea getting pegged back by Man United is the worst possible result for Bristol, because Chelsea are going to come out and be angry. Sam Kerr obviously got a goal after struggling in the Community Shield, but I think you could see 5 or 6, maybe even 7 or 8. Prayers go out, Bristol City fans. Prayers go out. Everton versus Tottenham, then at 1. Reading versus Aston Villa at 2. Man City, Brighton at 2. And Birmingham are hosting Manchester United at 2 as well. And all those games are on the FA Player. You should be able to find those anywhere in the world. Any kind of highlights in those games that you're looking forward to, Flo?
I think all of this weekend's fixtures could be a little bit one-sided. I think there's always, when you look at them, it always looks like to be an out-and-out stronger club within those matchups. So, yeah, I think it could be all the favourites coming out on top.
Did you see anything from Spurs on the weekend that made you think they might be able to get something against Everton, or do you think Everton are closer to making that step up?
I think Everton are much closer to making that step up. And Varley Govan's scored her debut goal within minutes of coming on. So
it was strictly business. Varley Govan was acting like it was. I mean, she wasn't quite Miedema levels. She did celebrate a little bit, but she was just there to get a goal and get out. I loved it.
Yeah, and I think they've added big players, and I think they're that'll be an easy one for them.
I think for those who are feeling quite quirky, if you're sort of a quirky person, and you're sitting there on Sunday, it's 9 a.m. In the UK, or maybe it's midnight in Australia. It's 2 p.m. Sorry, 2 p.m. in the UK, 9 a.m. in the US, midnight in Australia. I would maybe check out Reading Aston Villa. I think Reading coming off a bad result. Aston Villa, I actually didn't think were too bad, despite giving away two, absolutely heartbreaking goals. Do keep an eye on Diana Silva, who I thought had a really, really nice game leading the line for Aston Villa.
She's going to be player of the season, just you wait.
Player of the season. My Diana Silva shirt arrived, by the way. I know you were worried.
Oh, thank God. That was quick delivery to the US. Wow, I'm impressed with the Villa Club shop. Jess Villa... Keating, get on that. That's where you want to be buying your shirts.
Let's get some good press for the Villa Club shop. I think I love Gemma Davies, totally. I'm just like really, really pro Gemma Davies. She gave a great interview talking about vulnerability and softness in football managing, usually not being a thing. And I think she's really trying to kind of create a different approach to most managers. And I really want to see Villa succeed. And I think, that game could be a really fun watch if anyone's looking for something a bit different and maybe, you haven't found a favorite team yet or you're new to the league. What are you going to be working on this weekend, Flo? I think a lot of people, either who know us or don't know us, were kind of interested to know what we're up to or what we're doing. So we'll kind of finish the show by just talking about, ways you can get in contact with us. We'd love to hear your feedback and ways you could keep up with work we're doing outside the podcast.
Yes. So I'll be working on the BBC Women's Football Show on Sunday from Ealing Studios. We had a real...
Congratulations on those viewers.
all my handiwork, obviously. We had a real late one on Sunday. I think I left about 9:30 in the evening. And I think it was a bit of a shock to the system that first day back at school. But I'm hoping to be working on that most of the season. Not sure yet, but fingers crossed. And you can watch the BBC Women's Football Show on the iPlayer, on BBC iPlayer if you're in the UK. And I think they show it on the red button at 7:30 at night, or you could watch it on BBC One at 10:30. So there's loads of ways to watch it. They normally go all around the grounds during the season, and we'll have analysis with managers and always have ex-players on as well. So it's a nice little roundup. Obviously, we wish the programme was longer than 30 minutes because you don't get to see a lot of the highlights for some games. But hopefully soon, there'll be a bigger and better programme on the way. But yeah, that's where I'll be on Sunday. And if you want to follow me on social media, it's at Floyd Tweet on Twitter, at Floyd Insta on Instagram, and our show pages are Relatively Foot on Twitter and Relatively Football, I think, on Instagram. Or if you just type in Relatively Football on both of those channels, you should be able to find us. But yeah, we've had such great feedback from everyone so far. We really appreciate everyone reaching out just to say that they really enjoyed it, because that's really nice for us. And if there's anything you particularly want us to chat about on the show, then just let us know, because we're really looking to explore things well beyond the football pitch. So we hope that you can kind of contribute to that as well.
Yeah, feel free to email relativelyfootball@gmail.com if you want to put anything, anonymously, or just kind of write more than a tweet or a DM or something. I'm excited this Friday.
And review us on the podcast platforms, because that helps us get up the charts. So definitely do that as well.
Go smash 5 stars.
Yeah, always.
Not 3 stars, not 4 stars. 5 stars. And write something nice. I'll be covering the North Carolina Courage Houston Dash game on Friday night for the DynamoTheory.com is where I write for the Houston Dash. I just put a post up yesterday, kind of deep dive player cam analysis on Rachel Dely's 45 minutes at West Ham. So if you're ahead like me and you go crazy for just watching Rachel Dely, then dip in. All the West Ham fans get involved. And I think that's it.
That's it. And we will have a special episode next week. Our first sort of siblings, interview set up that we're going to be doing throughout the series. So we won't tell you too much about that, but we're going to have a brother and sister combo, a bit like us, and we're going to be chatting to them about football.
The dual format is just about to show its head. Well, yeah, stay safe out there, wear a mask, keep fighting the good fight, and I hope everyone's doing all right. Flo, it's good to see you. Give my love to London.
I will. Send my love back to New Orleans.
Always. Cheers. Bye.